So, let me start by saying that this is scalable by design. The machine learning talk that was supposed to happen got rescheduled and it won't be happening. This is taking place instead. So, I apologize, but it's part of the confusion that we all live in. Anyway, do you guys have a good lunch? It's a bit quiet. I can't hear any of you, which is kind of really disconcerting. All right, I'll try and be interactive anyway. How many of you guys write line of business applications, boring line of business applications? Me, yeah, okay. How many of these applications have more than one user using the system at any given time? Really? Cool. So you guys have concurrency, right? You know that. And how many of you love concurrency bugs and debugging them? Come on, Scott.
All right, enough of the boring questions. How many of you guys play Halo?
What?
Everyone, come on.
No.
Halo is a really popular game. Anyway, so there are hundreds of thousands of people playing Halo. Have you ever wondered what kind of distributed system goes behind that and manages everything from the cloud's perspective? How to build highly concurrent, scalable systems, providing a near real-time experience? Well, wouldn't it be cool if you could take some of that technology and use it in your own applications? So today, we're going to talk about an exciting piece of tech from Microsoft called Orleans that the Halo team actually use in their own live production systems. It makes it a lot easier to build these sorts of apps, and we hope you like it.
So my name is John Azariah. I'm a data scientist with Applied Data Science. I'm an Azure MVP. And this is Ruben Bond. He's the co-founder of Dapper Labs. And this is our first decade Melbourne, so we're really excited to have a chat about that.
All right. So I've got a few things to talk about today. First, we want to talk about why it's actually hard to get this stuff done. Then we want to talk about one solution that's been implemented. We want to cover the Orleans framework itself, which is really the meat of it. And we want to dive into a whole bunch of different demos to really demonstrate how to actually use this in your own work to write highly scalable applications.
Right. So what is the problem that we're trying to solve? We're trying to build distributed applications. I mean, we're all moving to the cloud, so it's not one server. It's not one server anymore. Everything's distributed. And so we have multiple servers, multiple databases, multiple clients. And therein lies the problem, right? And writing these kinds of distributed applications is hard. There's an inherent unreliability and latency in the communication between different components in the system. There's unpredictability. There's a performance problem with the data consistency that we have to manage, the CAP theorem and all of that. And so we've come up with several rules of thumb from our experience so that our systems can handle, you know, varying quantities of load, deal with transient and permanent failures. You know, obviously, we want lots of concurrent interactions. And above all, we want to be responsive under those conditions. So basically, we want, you know, a scalable, decoupled architecture that's resilient, performant. And that's kind of what we want to do. Now, this kind of application is hard. You know, traditional ways of doing it involve mutable data stores like a relational database or two sort of sharing the load. Then you have things like the CAP theorem that start playing into the game, and it makes it really difficult to reason about these systems. You can't reason about single-threaded systems easily when you have mutable state. It's much, much more difficult to reason about distributed concurrent systems when you have only the tools that normal mathematics to deal with. So what the main problem that we're trying to do is to find ways to reason about the behavior of the distributed system. Now, the reason why this is hard is because there's an innate indeterminacy in the system. There's stuff that you cannot determine. It's not that you're not able to determine because you're not trying hard enough. It's not that this unpredictability comes because you've got bugs in your code or your infrastructure is insufficient. This is actually the meat of the problem. This is an inherent feature of the problem that you're trying to solve. Unpredictability is the problem. So because unpredictability is a problem, you can't use the traditional mathematics, the traditional Turing computation type theories to actually determine the behavior of the system. You can't actually do that. So what are the options that you have? Well, in 1973, there was a fellow called Carl Hewitt, who was a very, very smart chap, and he came up with a way to embrace the indeterminacy of these systems. Rather than try to avoid them and try to work around them, make indeterminacy a core part of the operating model of the system that you're dealing with. And so he came up with the actor model. The objective was to deal with concurrency in a realistic fashion. So in the actor model, you have this thing called an actor. It is effectively the fundamental unit of computation. It encapsulates all the facets of computation, such as processing, storage, and communication. And it's inherently meant to deal with concurrency. It's inherently meant to deal with concurrency. So because you're inherently talking about communication and that kind of thing, concurrency, an actor by itself actually has no value. There's no point in having a single actor. The actors come in systems. It's the interaction between the actors that we want to reason about. So that's where the value comes in. So in order to make it easy to talk about such systems, we put some bounds about what the actors can and cannot do in our systems. So in theory, what we start with is four axioms. We say, actors are only allowed to do these four things, and then we can actually talk about the systems that such actors behave in. So actors can create other actors, they can send messages to other actors that they know about, they process one message at a time, and they designate what they want to do with the next message. And that's because in classic actor theory, there is no state management. State is actually passed around as messages, right? Now, everything you do in an actor system is used based on these four principles, foundational principles. And because you're talking about things where you're sending messages between actors and so on, you actually have that indeterminacy built in. When you send a message to another actor, you have no idea who else is sending messages to that other actor. You have no idea what that actor is actually doing at this point in time. And this system is inherently built to deal with that indeterminacy. There's also the concept of unpredictability that comes in here, because the underlying system in an actor model doesn't guarantee anything. It doesn't guarantee that the other actor is going to be around to receive your message. It doesn't guarantee that the message you send is actually going to reach. It doesn't guarantee that it will be processed properly. It doesn't guarantee anything. All that the underlying infrastructure is expected to guarantee you is that it will make some kind of best effort to give a message across. And that's all we have to deal with. Now, if you work with any system that makes a stronger guarantee than that, it makes it much more hard to reason about the behavior of that system, because you'll get into things like two-phase commit and all that kind of stuff. So what do we have here? We have a fairly unreliable fabric that makes some kind of best effort to do some communication. You have these actors. You have a way to address an actor. You need to have some kind of possibly a durable message store to do store and forward kind of thing. And then we have to have a way of actually dealing with failure. So one of the constructs that you can use for that is something called a promise or a future. And what that is it is a handle to something that represents a function call. It's not the function call, it's not the result of the function call. It's something that represents what the function would evaluate to when it finally finishes evaluating. And what that gives us is that if something happens and there's a failure along the way, you'll get back a broken promise. And that gives you the ability to now reason about things where failure and unpredictability and unreliability in the system is actually a core part of the underlying fabric. So we already have this in .NET, right? We have tasks. Tasks are effectively futures that you can use. There are many implementations of actors. There are many open kind of ways of doing this. Most of them tend to be kind of object-oriented. There's some that have a very strong functional component. Erlang, for example, is built almost entirely on actors. And there's good and bad and ugly and all that, but when we come to Project Orleans, we've kind of taken these concepts and suited them to Azure. So you have basically an unbounded computational capability to be able to be able to run this program on. So you have unbounded scale for computational power, you have unbounded scale for storage, and you're able to actually do a whole bunch of stuff in the Azure fabric. So what we're going to do now is take a deep dive into Project Orleans itself. I mean, that's what I've told you about is actor theory from that point of view. And we'll figure out how Orleans actually does its thing.
All right, thanks. So that's the actor model. Now, we're here today to talk about Project Orleans, which actually implements something slightly different. It's a variation they call virtual actors. So in the actor model, John was saying that actors can create other actors. In Orleans, however, those actors, or as we call them, grains, just in their terminology, exist eternally. So they're always there. We'll see what that means in a minute. Now, actors in Orleans still send messages to one another, and they still process those messages just one at a time. Although, if you really want to, you can break out of that one at a time restriction if you know what you're doing, if you want to. Now, the way that you interact with actors or grains in Orleans is very familiar. They're just plain old interfaces or plain old CLR objects. So the behavior of a grain in Orleans is represented by one of these interfaces. And you provide Orleans with an implementation of that interface, and Orleans takes care of managing the life cycle of the instances of that interface. So at runtime, it manages all of that. And the way that you send messages between grains is just by calling methods on grains as you're used to whenever you're using .NET objects on just one machine. So if you think about the grain interface as a traditional object-oriented interface and the implementation as a traditional object, then an instance is represented by what they call an activation. We never explicitly create or delete those activations. This is coming back to that eternal life cycle thing. Instead, you use a factory and you just request a reference to it. And then under the hood, Orleans will manage the life cycle of it. So you get that reference and you start sending it messages. So the activation itself has to exist somewhere. We don't need to actually know where it is. It's location transparent. But it has to actually exist somewhere. It's just like virtual memory, if you think about it, and this is why they call it virtual actors. In virtual memory, you just reference an address in memory, and the operating system will handle paging that in and eventually paging that back out to disk for you without the developer needing to worry too much about it. Now, that somewhere might be on another machine. So there is some inherent latency in this, as John was talking about before. So in Orleans, we model that latency by requiring that all interfaces have methods that return a task or a task of T, right? So we're using very familiar constructs that we're already using every day. We have interfaces and references to objects. We have method calls. We've got async and await for asynchrony. And we've got try-catch for exception handling. Orleans just handles all of the heavy lifting in the background to make our lives as DevOps a lot easier. So that's the model and the SDK that Orleans provides to us. But how does it actually work in practice, in the cloud? Now, Orleans provides us with a cloud-native runtime. It was designed for Azure, designed for the cloud. As we said before, the grains, they need to exist somewhere, even if we don't actually have to know where that is. And we call that somewhere a silo. So the grains go in a silo, just like on a farm. In Azure, a silo is a worker role. So there's just a one-to-one correlation between them. Now, each of these silos might have hundreds of thousands of grains in them. And there might be hundreds or even thousands of silos. So if we take Halo, for example, in Halo, there are players, and there are games, and there are leaderboards and other statistics and things like that. So there's all these different sort of domain models, and each one of them is represented by a different grain. So you've got a player grain and a game grain and etc. We'll show you what that means soon. Now, during peak time, your load's going to shoot up as everyone logs on, and you're going to need to scale up. So you add a new worker role, and as soon as Orleans sees that, it starts load balancing new activations onto that worker role. And of course, because this is the real world, at some point, a machine's going to go down, either temporarily just because it's being patched, or permanently because some hardware failure, or maybe you've scaled back. Orleans handles this as well. And those grains will be activated on the other roles next time they're needed. So you can really see how Orleans is built for the cloud era. So now we've covered the model, the SDK, and the runtime in brief. Let's see it in action. All right, so what I've got up here, this is our Orleans solution, just with all of our, at least most of our demos in it. Every Orleans solution that you encounter is going to have four important parts. It's going to have that grain interfaces project, which we mentioned before, that defines all of the contracts which we're going to be implementing. It's going to have a grains project, and that's going to provide the actual implementations of each of those contracts. And then it's going to have the silo, which is, in a realistic scenario, is normally just given to you and you just host it up in Azure. But it's also going to have a client, and that's how you actually get things in the outside world. You actually call into the grain, make calls against things, and whatnot. So in our example here, let me just show you what a grain interface looks like. I've got this greeter grain in this first project. Is everyone able to see that well? Good. Okay, so this greeter grain, it's just an Orleans grain which has only two methods. You can say hi to it, and you can tell it your name so we can respond, and you can say goodbye, adios. This is an Orleans grain because it inherits from this other interface called iGrain with integer key. Now, before we said that you need to use a factory to get a reference to something, the with integer key bit says that the reference we're going to use is going to be the I want a greeter grain with this number. So maybe I want greeter grain number 76 or whatever it happens to be. So that's our greeter grain here, and we're going to go into the implementation of how that is actually done now. All right, here's the implementation of that interface. Important things to note here is that the implementation just implements that interface. It also inherits from this grain class, and that's just something the Orleans SDK gives us to make sure that all the plumbing goes through well, and basically gives you a few helper methods and things like that. So our implementation of Hola is very simple. All it does is return a task from result saying good morning, afternoon, evening, and whoever you provided in the parameter there. And then secondly, our implementation of RDOS is a little bit different because he doesn't like saying goodbye, this guy. And so he throws an exception, which says, I can't do that, pal. And that should, if everything works correctly, get propagated back to the client. And so here's the silo and client, which I said before, it just merged into one in our project. And that's only for simplicity, because we're not hoisting this into Azure. We're just running this locally. So the important things to note here is that we initialize a client, pointing it to this config. It just says, look local. And after we've done that, we can just start making as many calls into Orleans as we want. So the bulk of this demo is down here. Before, I mentioned that in order to actually make calls into grains, you need to use a factory to get a reference to it. And I said that the greeter grain takes an integer as the key. So we've just chosen to give it number 99 in this case, because you know it doesn't matter which greeter we call, they all do the exact same thing. So the idea is meaningless here. And then the first thing we're going to want to do is say, hola, John. And we're going to wait that, and then we're just going to print it out to the console and continue on with everything. But what I really want to show you is how failures are propagated between the silo or the grain and the client that's calling into it, so that you can use try-catch as you normally would. And so the next thing we do is we try and call RDOs, and we know that that's going to throw, so we're going to catch and just print out the message. Finally, I want to show you that Orleans is not going to kill that grain off once it's thrown an exception. It's basically going to be reactivated the next time you try and call it, because these failures might be transient. Maybe there was a connectivity issue between you and it, or it and something else like storage, and we need to make sure it recovers from that in a very transparent way. So let me just try and run this. And we should see Orleans print out a bunch of stuff. It's basically starting up, and the client is finding the server, and the server is organizing itself into a cluster. And you can see the output down the very bottom. So as we hoped, it says, good afternoon, John, because it's after 12 now. And then when we try and say goodbye, we get that I can't do that pal exception, just as we thought. And finally, yep, it does say good afternoon, John, again, once we give it that second call to show that, yeah, the grains do recover successfully.
So how many of you guys saw Dave Glover and Rocky Heckman's talk for the Internet of Things? Did they mention Orleans in that version of the talk? Excuse me. So you can see that there's a couple of things that kind of are, that's actually deceptively simple, that code, right? It looks like you've created a class, you defined a class somewhere, you've somehow managed to instantiate it, and then just make method calls to the class and expect everything to work. What's actually happening in the background is actually quite frightening, because if you think about what's going on in the Halo kind of environment, is that somewhere back there, there's a whole cluster of worker nodes that has that DLL pushed up, and then you've remotely invoked this thing without knowing that you've done it. All that sort of gives it away to you that you've done something different is the fact that you didn't new up the class. You called a factory to give you an instance of the class that implemented that interface. So it's actually very simple to use, but the power behind it is quite impressive. Now, this, as Ruben pointed out, the ID doesn't matter, because you know the class's behavior doesn't depend on anything other than the time of day, right? When we were running this thing in the morning, it was giving me good morning. Now it's telling me good afternoon, and when we run it at 6 o'clock in the evening, it will say good evening. And it doesn't matter which activation of the grain I call, it's going to do exactly the same behavior. Now, this allows us to basically mark this as a stateless grain, which allows Orleans to do some pretty interesting optimizations. Hang on, let me just, yeah, that's it, thank you. So if you mark something as a stateless worker, then Orleans can actually do very, very smart things. And this is a very powerful way, for example, of function shipping. You can basically create very scalable fabrics to go off and do computations and things like that. Let's see. So brings us to the interesting question, what happens when you have state? Well, most real world problems, you're going to have objects that have some kind of state associated with them. And you're going to, you know, anyone do domain-driven design here? 3-4 people? Okay. So when you do domain-driven design, you're always talking about what are the capabilities of the domain object, and then what is the information that it needs to work on. Now, in classic object-oriented fashion, you can do pretty much exactly that here. You just have to decide how to model a problem based on message passing, state management, and objects. And that's actually very, very familiar stuff. It's familiar territory. So not only is it easy to use the framework itself and look at the code, which is familiar, the way you design is also familiar. So I'm going to take an example of a, it's somewhat of a contrived example. So a little while ago, my daughter had her little birthday. She's now 2.5, 3. So she had her second birthday. And we had a little party, and a whole bunch of friends came over, and we played Pass the Parcel. Right? So imagine, if you will, a bunch of kids, 5 kids, because I got 5 fingers, standing around in a circle, and every third child gets to take the wrapping off the parcel, take the little present, and then step out of the game, right? And the one left last gets the big prize. So obviously you want to figure out where you have to stand to get the big prize. So let's say that you got five children, you're going to knock every third child out at every turn. So you got 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, right? And so you need to be standing in the fourth position to be able to win. Now, this is a classic computer science problem, as it turns out. And there are many ways to solve it. You can solve it using circular linked lists. You can solve it using bit vectors. You can do all of that. But what we're going to do is we're going to model it as a message passing problem, where the parcel is actually the message. And it knows, the parcel would know how many layers are left before the next prize, who needs to get out next, and the child would know whether it's in the game or not. So you have two grains that can now interact with each other. So you have a game grain and you have a child grain, and the child grain is passing some state around using a message. That's kind of, does everybody get the analogy a little bit? Confused everyone. All right, that's good. So here's the child grain, and it knows how to play a move by passing a message around. And a game grain simply says play and gives back a set of results. Now notice that I'm actually going to pass back entire grains in the result, and that's actually allowed. So the number of restrictions you have in the kind of code that you write is actually very small. You can pass back pretty much anything you want. You can pass messages around, you can pass entire grains around, you can pass small pieces of data around, anything you feel like. And so let us go and take a look at the child grain. And the first thing you notice is, in order to play the game, the child finds the next child by its ID and passes it an appropriate message. So if the child is itself eliminated, it passes a message saying it's from an eliminated child. Or if I've got more layers wrapping on the parcel, then I'm going to pass it back from an active child. If not, if I'm the last one standing, I'm the winner. And otherwise, I'm just about to get eliminated, so I'm going to modify the message, take off the wrapper, and pass it around. So that's in effect the message passing business. So the first thing you'd notice is that eventually you get back a message. So you pass the parcel, it'll eventually come back to you. Now, remember when Ruben said that every actor uses only one processor, only one message at a time? What does this look like? This looks like a deadlock. Because if you're waiting for a message to be passed around, and then the message comes back to you in order to finish processing it, you can't possibly handle the second message because you're deadlocked waiting for the result on the first one. And so to prevent that from happening, and in fact, this is how actor systems model recursion, you have the ability to mark something as reentrant where the messages get interleaved. And so you can actually use that attribute, and Orleans will actually send the messages around. Now, we also want to make sure that if the machine that we are running the game on dies halfway in the middle of the game, let's say we have a very long circle, and the game's going to go on for some time, we want to start back up where we left off, right? Because people are already taking their little presents and gone off. You can't bring them back in and redo the thing from start. So you can actually store the state at every move, and that's actually what happens over here. So at every point where we make a change to the state of the thing, we can actually mark it as dirty and write it off into Azure. And so this is a way in which you can preserve state between grains and share state between grains using Azure storage. So the whole business of virtually unlimited storage and virtually unlimited processing power comes from using things like this. So anyway, enough talk, let's run the game. So we got 10 people, in my game, we start with 10 people and we eliminate every other person. And I've also turned off that frightening wall of messages that goes through. almost. And notice what happened. At the end of it all, we get a result in the past tense saying, hey, the children were eliminated in that order, which is, if you think about it, exactly what you'd expect. If you had 10 people standing around, and you'd expect all the even children to go out first, and then all the odd ones, and the last remaining one would be 5. Now this is, so we figured out how to solve the problem, modeled the problem using message passing. We figured out how to make reentrant greens. We can also make the messages immutable so that they can actually add some performance characteristics. We've shown how to handle state and persist it with storage. And we've got some logging stuff that we've seen that tells us how it's going. But obviously that's not good enough. If you're playing Halo and you're having a fight with some other person in Halo, you don't want to have a frenzy of activity, no feedback, and then eventually a word that says you're dead. You kind of want feedback along the way, right? And that's kind of useful. Now, if you think about cooperative multitasking that takes place between these various distributed components, how do you get to get incremental feedback? It's important to be able to do that. And in order to do that, there's a mechanism that Orleans has, which is called the observable. So let's just go in here and take a look at this. So here's a grain observer. The grain observer is marked as such because it implements from iGrain observer, and it has methods that allow it to be notified when interesting things happen. So think of it as events on steroids, or events actually done properly. It's a requirement that all of these get, they're of type void. And then we can go in and start changing the way in which we play. So what I've done in this system is created an extra grain. Now this grain kind of acts as a clearinghouse. So it sits in the middle. There's one activation of the grain, it sits in the middle. All of the children in the game send it notifications about what it has done. And this grain can now fan out the results to anyone who's listening to it. So it's a pub-sub kind of grain. So I've done that here by creating a grain that takes a set of observers. So anyone, any number of them can subscribe, and I'll just add them on to this list of subscribers. And then as the children tell me that they're eliminated, I'll notify them to each of the subscribers, and we can move on. So in order to make that happen, the game grain, the child grain now has to not write to the console directly, but to send a message to the grain saying something has happened to me. So it actually notifies the publishing grain that something's happened to it. And so you can now use a kind of pub-sub mechanism to send messages back and forth, keep things within synchrony and so on and so forth, and make that work. So let's try and see how that changes the behavior. So I put the diagnostics back in this one. And what you'd expect to see is messages coming in an unpredictable way. So you, as the children do something, a notification happens. That notification is asynchronous. It may or may not come in order. And you'll end up having this situation here where the Orleans silo is running message sort of pops up at an indeterminate position in the middle, because true multithreading is happening over here from a logical perspective. And you can actually pass all the messages around, and eventually you'll come back with the same result. But you're now observing the behavior of the thing from the inside as you go along, right? Okay, so what have we talked about? We've talked about being able to publish notifications and subscribing notifications, managing the subscribers in a fault-tolerant manner, which we can look at. So if you look at the pub-sub grain, it actually knows how to deal with systems. So this notify, actually knows how to deal with situations where the subscriber is no longer around, or the subscriber is reattached, and so on and so forth. That's actually given to you by Orleans itself. There's an observer subscriber that you can manage, that you can look at. So having all of that is cool. We've looked at a lot of text, but obviously everyone here, when you talk about concurrent multi-user systems like we did in the beginning, what do we think about? We think about the web. So we're going to try and find a way to actually talk about how to integrate this with a web application so that you can see how it would really work.
Thanks. All right. My housemate, he is an avid cook, and he's also a developer. And being a developer, he's used to really good tools like Gist and GitHub. And so he came up with this idea that he wanted to have basically a Gist, but for recipes. And so, of course, being a developer, he decided, let's go and do something about that. Let's try and make this simple thing, just a very simple one-page app that's like a Gist for recipes. And so he came up with this thing, which we call ForkTip. And it's just a very simple app that just lets you name a recipe. Let's, delicious cake or something. And, add some details to it, add some steps, ingredients, and whatnot. And then you can share it, and importantly, because it's got to be like Git, you've got to be able to fork it, right? And, so here's, for example, some low-carb fish and chips. This is basically what it's meant for, right? You can take one recipe for fish and chips and then fork it, remix it, make it into this other thing. But how do you actually model this sort of a thing in Orleans on the web? So here's a very simple project here for ForkTip. And before we dive into any of the code, you should notice that it's got those four important projects I talked about before. You've got the interfaces that you're going to be implementing. You've got the grains, which actually implement those interfaces. And then you've got the silos. And this one here, this is just taken from the CodePlex site. So Orleans is hosted up on CodePlex at orleans.codeplex.com. And you can go there and download the sample projects and whatever. And this is in there. So you don't actually have to write the silo code yourself. And then it's got the client. So in our case, the client is a web server. And we've just written it up as a simple... See if I can get down here. As a simple ASP.NET web API project. So it's got a web API on one side, and then it's got a static site on the other, which is a AngularJS single page app. And that's down here. He just calls into the various controllers on there. So let me show you what that actually looks like in practice. Actually, before we do that, let's have a look at how we've modeled it. We've basically just got one kind of grain here, and that's the recipe grain. And so the recipe grain, it's got no special attributes, but it's a grain and it's got a GUID key because, we expect there to be a hell of a lot of recipes for some reason. And here's the methods that you would expect. You can set its name and add some description and write the author down and ingredients and whatnot. And you can just get the value back so that you can display it. And it's very simple, right? It's like a plain old CLR object. And so, just very briefly, here's the storage provider itself, and you can see it really doesn't do much special. It tries to initialize itself if it hasn't been initialized, and then it just writes its state out as John showed you before. But what I really want to show you is just how simple it is to hook that sort of thing up to a web API. And so here's what an ASP.NET API controller for something which calls back into Orleans is going to look like. It's very simple. You get a reference to the grain, and then you make calls on it. So this method here, it's just going to go to the grain, and it's going to say, give me all your contents, your recipe, so I can pass it back to the user and display it. And if you look down the list here of the different routes and API effectively, you can see that they pretty much just correspond one-to-one between the web API and the grain interface itself. which is great. So we just take in the ID of the grain in this case and just pipe that through so that we can find out where exactly we're going. Now, some methods are going to want to actually validate that you've actually got the input which should be there. For example, you might want to do some sort of authentication, and that's going to involve, let's say, hitting Facebook or Twitter or Google or Office 365 or whatever it is that you need to authenticate against. And through experience, using this day in and day out for the past several months to a year, I would recommend that what you do is you always do your authentication on the website, because that's a lot easier. But I think you should always put your authorization itself, as in, can Joe edit this recipe and whatnot, should always be inside the grains, because they know who owns them and what those users can actually do to them. So there is that distinction there between authentication and authorization, just as a recommended pattern, really. All right. So that shows you just how easy it is to make a web app that calls into Orleans. And you can check out the code for that. It's just at GitHub, dapr.lab/forktip. So if you want a sample project to start with, if you want to make your own site and host that on Azure, then I'd recommend just using that as a base project, because it's got most things set up. For example, it's got the Orleans SDK included in it so that you can ship it into source control and not have to worry about who's installed the SDK, because there's no NuGet package for Orleans just yet. John?
Cool. Right, so actually, do you want to talk about the fact that it's already on Azure and you've deployed it?
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, if you are in the crowd, if you want to play with it, you can just go to forktip.cloudapp.net, and if you go there, you can just start creating and then sharing recipes and whatever. It's not meant to be very serious, but there you go. I'm going to tweet this one as John, because I'm on his PC.
Sorry.
Yeah, so have fun with it and just check out the code and see how easy it is to use.
Right. So look, I think, let's switch over back to the thing. So we've actually covered quite a bit of ground in this short talk, right? We've started with the basic understanding of what the problem was. We've kind of discussed the actor model and the theoretical underpinnings under it. Then we dived into Project Orleans and its interpretation of the actor model solution or the variant thereof. Then we talked about the specifics about how to interact with the objects themselves and the underlying pieces, what the runtime does. Then we talked about looking at some code. We saw the various projects that go into building an Orleans application. We touched briefly on the kind of design patterns that you would use to model problems to use in Orleans. And then we finally wrapped it up by looking at a live site running in Azure, which actually uses Orleans as its backend. And in fact, all of the state for the recipes and the copies and the clones of the of those recipes are all stored as stateful grains in Orleans using Azure Table. So we've covered persistence, we've covered reentrancy, we've covered basically all of the main characteristics of the Orleans grains. And that's in effect what we've done. Now, where is this being used? Obviously, it's being used in Halo. People are building smart caches and the Internet of Things, which Rocky and Dave are going to talk about in the second session as well. There are several ways of actually using Orleans to basically do that kind of thing. And of course, quite a few games that are built on top of that. So in terms of related content, there's Orleans.codeplex. There's several very, very good, more theoretical videos that you can look at if you want a deeper fundamental understanding of the thing. But also the Orleans Codeplex has some very practical advice and practical examples. There's quite an active community on Twitter that you can follow. So there's Bykov, there's Ruben and me, if you like, and Richard Asprey and so on. And that's pretty much it, I think. I think we're done for the moment. Any questions?
If you've got any questions, if you just put your hand up, a microphone will come to you.
You want to put this thing on?
Yeah.
Any questions at all? Cool. Thanks very much for attending.
Thanks. Cheers.